Footy Roundup back with you, Rob Sirjanik and Matt Tidcombe. Our first post-World Cup episode, Matt, and we're going to jump right into some of the major transfers across the big leagues.
Yeah, we're going to examine what transfer activity has been happening in England, Germany, Italy and Spain, and a couple of the other leagues like France and Portugal. So lots of transfers, lots of money being spent, Rob.
Diving into England, Matt, your native league here. What sticks out for you? I mean, Manchester United, I consider Louis van Gaal has come on to coach that squad. We touched on it very briefly last show. We both think it's going to be a fantastic move for Man United. RVP's already there. What are some of the key pieces Man United brought in?
Luke Shaw's the first part. They found their new left back. Patrice Evra has moved on to Juventus. So Luke Shaw will be the guy. They paid Southampton $34 million for the guy. So, and you know, he's a young defender. Left back would be plying down that left side for England for many, many years.
I know,
also,
you spoke pretty highly of him, too.
Yeah, I think he's a very good player. He's young. He still has some stuff to get better at. But, you know, for United, it's a nice move for them. I think you know, in the long run, it will work out well. And like I said, for England, he'll be roaming down there, too. So
they spent a lot of money on Herrera as well.
Yeah, they did. They brought Herrera in from Bilbao, you know, a good midfield player. He had a really nice assist last night for United in their game against the LA Galaxy. So being interested to see where he fits in. You know, in that pack, whether how forward he plays, especially with how Rooney likes to kind of hold back a little and let RVP play up front more directly. So I'll be curious to see where he fits in, but maybe a bit too much money, $36 million, but good player.
That's what I thought with both signings. I think they're both good young pickups for Man United, but I question the dollar cost associated with both.
Right, and I mean, the money we're saying here is in pounds as well, so it's not even in dollars. I think the Shaw one was a case of you had to pay that if you wanted him because someone else would have.
It might also be a case, Matty, as an English player in an English league, he might be getting valued a little higher than he would maybe somewhere else.
Right, as well. Yeah, that's very true. And I think he's a guy who wanted to stay in England too. So I think United, it's a good move for him. And for United, it's a good move too. So I guess as well, Chelsea, Robert being pretty big, I guess their two main guys have been Diego Costa and Cesc Fabregas coming in.
Yeah, huge pickups for them. Fabregas seems to be just a little bit of like a hired gun at this point. He went to Barcelona. I wouldn't go so far as to say he disappointed during his time there, but
he was good, not great.
Yeah, I don't think he achieved as much as maybe for sure the team and probably even himself would have hoped. We all knew that was going to be a tough nut to crack to get into that roster. Now he's going back to England, and he's going to be going against, I guess, a rival of a team he used to play for in Arsenal. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. I don't think I remember him saying that he didn't really have that much interest in returning to Arsenal. So, you know, I guess he gets hooked up with Mourinho now. So
the fans will give it to him, I'm sure, when he plays there.
Yeah, the Arsenal fans will, yeah. But, I mean, he was a really good player for Arsenal. He was a good servant for a very long time. So, but, you know, football fans can be really fickle. So I'm sure they'll find a way to complain about it. But for Chelsea, it's a great pickup. And, you know, the Diego Costa signing is a really good acquisition too.
It is. You'd have to think that that's going to be a step forward from an Eto'o or a Torres.
Yeah, it can't be any worse, really. I mean, Torres and Eto'o weren't exactly the greatest last year. And Diego Costa was on fire for Madrid as he led them to, well, you know, the Liga title, Champions League final. And, you know, he wasn't really all that effective at the World Cup due to injury. But, you know, when he's on his game, he's probably one of the best strikers in the world right now.
The champs and Abramovich were relatively quiet during this period. What are your thoughts on their moves? I mean, Sanya's a pretty good player.
Yeah, but he didn't cost them anything, so that's a free transfer coming in from Arsenal. I don't think they needed to do too much, and they haven't done. They've only brought in Sagna, as you mentioned, Willy Caballero, and Fernando from Porto. Porto always seem to produce great players, and
they seem mostly like depth moves to me, really.
Yeah, there's nothing here that I don't think. I think Sagna will probably give Micah Richards a run for his money at right back.
I would think so, yeah.
Sagna's proved himself pretty good, and I think Richards hasn't really stepped forward all that much over the last couple of years, but it's nothing more. Like, the Fernando Caballero signings are nothing more than just a bit of depth. The Sagna one, though, is a potential starter at right back.
I like what Arsenal did with Alexis Sanchez Matthew Debushi. Kind of, I don't want to quite say under the radar signings. No. You know, I think most fans and soccer fans are aware of these two players, but I think the value, what they're going to get from them, might be very good. And I also think they're two guys who really suit the way Arsene Wenger likes to have his team play.
The Sanchez signing was a really good one for my money. A lot of money, though. £44 million.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
he seems like an Arsenal kind of guy, though.
Right. And
in
game. He's a young, quicker guy. And, like, with Giroud up front, kind of, you know, heading around. And I mean, Giroud's a very good player, don't get me wrong. But he's a very different player than Sanchez is. So, hopefully, those two meshing together should create, you know, some good opportunities. I do like that signing a lot. I think Sanchez didn't really get his time at Barcelona too much, and he played quite well when he got his chances. But, you know, with obviously Messi up there and Pedro and some other guys, it was always hard for him. The Bucci signing, I mean, like, he had a really good World Cup for France as well. So 10 million, that's a pretty good bit of business for Arsenal there.
I think so. And you look at what they got for the two players combined, it seems reasonable. I remember reading in some outlets that Arsenal was considering getting Mandzukic. I never really thought of that as a fit for
that one
team
too.
Or player.
Especially with Giroud, similar kind
of
player.
Like, Mendes is a target man, and, you know, Arsenal likes their forwards to be a little bit more fluid, not too unlike, you know, the way Barcelona would play with the false nine, right? So that never seemed like a fit for me. The last major team, Matt, interesting from both our perspectives, I suppose. Liverpool did a lot.
They did. They went out and they threw some money around. I guess they raided Southampton. They took Ricky Lambert and Adam Lallana, both English internationals. Both, you know, Lambert is a little up there in age. Is a Bristol Rovers fan. He made his name for us a few years back, and then moved on to Southampton, and now obviously moving on to Liverpool. So for me personally, I really enjoy seeing him move to a big club like Liverpool. I think he deserves it. I guess the Lallana signing, Rob, kind of similar to the Shaw, left-sided player, really young, quick, a lot of potential. His best player is ahead of him by a long shot. I mean, he's going to be a great signing for Liverpool. I really like the Emre Can signing as well, from Bayern Leverkusen, the German. You know, another guy to have in midfield. You can never have enough midfielders, and with Stevie G around too. So
you can't. And also, the rumor mill has been pressing hard about Dejan Lovren, the Croatian center half.
Another Southampton player.
Yeah, close friends with Ricky Lambert and also Lallana, who he played with at Southampton. He's very anxious to join his former mates there. And I think the writing's on the wall that it's probably only going to be a matter of time before Lovren goes there. It's a case of...
Seems that way.
Yeah, Southampton wants, you know, their fixed amount of money, and, you know, Liverpool's going to try to play hardball a little bit to get it at a lower price, but I would expect at some point that that's probably going to get done. That's the way business gets done in the world of international soccer, usually.
Pretty much, right? And also, Liverpool seems to be back now. You know, a really good Premier League season last year. You know, for a lot of people, could have won the league if they kind of kept it together towards the end and kind of threw it away there, unfortunately. But yeah, Liverpool are back, you know, Champions League next year. So, you know, a lot of reasons for these guys to be going there.
Quick early thoughts on the English league. Any team that jumps out to you as a favorite? You know, Man City's defending. Liverpool, Chelsea both look improved. We both expect a lot more from Man U with their coaching staff now.
I think you got to look at United.
Yeah.
Just because Louis van Gaal coming in, they have the setup as it is. I really do like what Liverpool have going. Obviously, losing, they got to basically replace Suarez, which we'll touch on here in a minute. But, you know, and Chelsea are still going to be good. The Diego Costa.
I think Chelsea's the one I'm leaning towards a little.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really close. Like, last year was kind of a little over the place, but I think this year all those five teams really, really do have a shot at it. And you can't rule out a team like Tottenham either. So, you know,
with what Chelsea did, though, they added, you know, a new starting nine, which was a huge improvement.
Right.
And a starting 10 right behind him in
his
prime.
And they also brought in Philippe Luis, the center half from Atletico Madrid, for 20 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they really did address some big needs of theirs.
This is almost retro Chelsea with Abramovich a bit.
In a way, yeah. And I mean, like I said, Tottenham as well, as the other team up there in the top six. They brought in Michael Vorm and Ben Davis from Swansea. So
it's going to be another five or six horse race, probably.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt.
Switching over to the Spanish league, Matty, the big three, hyperactive. If you look on paper what Barcelona and Real Madrid are going to trot out next season, it's going to be absolutely disgusting. Barcelona... Luis Suarez, Ivan Rakitic, Jeremy Mathieu, Claudio Bravo, Croatian wonder kid Alan Halilovic. I don't know anybody who, on paper at least, did more than Barca.
No, you're right. I mean, the Suarez one still makes me laugh. But Barcelona, remember, is somewhat, you know, not allowed to make transfers right now. So it's kind of interesting how they've been able to find a loophole in the system and pull off these guys. And Suarez obviously is a guy who isn't allowed to play for 4 months, so... Suarez for 95 million is just obscure money.
It seems absurd, to be honest.
The Gareth Bale transfer to Real Madrid last year pretty much set the bar of what ridiculous is, and this is touching it again. I mean, Bale's a great player, but he's not worth what Madrid played in. I mean,
no
one's worth 100 million pounds. Like, come on.
No, and they just throw this money out like candy on Halloween at these points. It's
crazy.
When the pockets are almost endless and they're all competing with each other, you just start seeing stupid numbers. But if you look at what Barcelona is going to throw out next year offensively, like, are you kidding me?
It's going to be crazy.
Neymar, Messi, Suarez up top, Rakitic behind them as a creative mid.
Oh, and by the way, they have Pedro coming off the bench. Woo! Watch, like...
They're going to try to win games like 6-3? Like,
yeah, tell me about it, right? But, I mean, like, they found their replacement in Valverde as well, in Marc-Andre Stegen from Germany.
Yeah.
They brought him from Mönchengladbach for 12 million, like... Hey, just come play for us. Here's a bunch of money, Mönchengladbach. And then a team like that isn't going to say no to that kind of money, especially from a big team like Barcelona. So, I mean, Barcelona, in a way, you have to look at maybe being favorites like Champions League area as well moving forward.
Yeah, I don't think the double's out of the question for them.
No, not at all.
At all. And I do think that Rakitic at 19 million in his prime, when you saw what he did for Sevilla last season, I think that's a ridiculous steal. He's going to fit in that tiki-taka type style perfectly. He's going to be, I guess, maybe the new Xavi for them. They're looking for the creative force behind the strikers.
Right.
I think he's going to excel in that position where he doesn't have to maybe do as much running or cleaning up at the back. And their crosstown rivals, Real Madrid, not much, just James Rodriguez and Toni Kroos. They're not bad.
James Rodriguez, I guess, is kind of a little known player these kind days of okay. after the World Cup. I really do like the James Rodriguez signing. You know, he had a great World Cup, 6 goals, golden boot. You know, probably the star of the World Cup, to be honest, for a lot of people. And
yeah, I think for our money, Matt, we were both chatting about it prior. We were saying that we think he really should have won that over Messi.
Yeah, best player of the tournament, absolutely. But you know, that is what it is, I guess. That's the way FIFA roll. But you know, for Real Madrid, he's gonna be brilliant for them. I think Ronaldo is gonna be excited to have a playmaker like him behind him. Not that, you know, Real Madrid don't have playmakers by any stretch of imagination. And then they, you know, just for good measure, they go out and sign Toni Kroos from Germany, from Bayern Munich. So,
well, here's the projected starters at this point that I see it for midfield and forward. You tell me if this looks impressive for you when you consider.
I'm gonna go on a limb and say yes. Already.
Yeah, when you consider the pedigree of these players and how talismanic they were to their international teams. Benzema up top. Right behind him, the newly acquired James Rodriguez, Bale and Ronaldo on the wings, Toni Kroos and Modric in the two hole in the 4-2-3-1.
That's not bad. Might win a few games this year. The Toni Kroos signing, actually, I admit, this one surprised me. Because a lot of these German guys like to stay in their native country, especially with Munich and Dortmund, how good they are at Champions League domestically. A lot of them seem to stick around. So I was a little surprised he went to Madrid.
Is that a full-on admission, I guess, that Xabi Alonso's done at this point? Nothing more than a bit player?
Yeah, I would.
I can't see him starting over Kroos or Modric in this formation.
You don't spend that money on Kroos for him to come in and ride the bench. So
no, it wouldn't make any
sense. I mean, also, like their rivals and crosstown friends, Atletico Madrid, they spent a little bit of money. I guess, Rob, your end, they brought in your boy Mario Mandzukic.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing for them. When you consider what Costa brought to the table for them, you know, he's a traditional target man. Mario's very much the same. He produces basically a goal every other game, Mandzukic, which I think in Atletico's formation, Diego Simeone is going to love him because he's extremely fiery, a little bit borderline temperamental, and extremely aggressive player. And I think we saw with Simeone's reaction in the Champions League that he's that type of coach. So right. I think it's a seamless fit for them. Losing Costa, they couldn't ask for a much better striker to slide in. It should be a really comfortable fit for them. And I think Atletico can compete again, even though on paper they don't have as much. Sometimes you don't need that on paper. You remember what Real had in their generation with what Zidane, Beckham, Figo, and all those guys, and they never really got it done. You have to still fit as a team.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? And they have a big part here at Atletico. I guess they're assuming now that Courtois isn't coming back because they brought Jan Oblak from Benfica for 16 million. So I think it's safe to say that Courtois is going back to Chelsea this year, which then leads to the question, is Cech riding the bench or is Courtois riding the bench? But that's a decision.
I'd have to think Cech, no?
You have to, surely.
Or maybe loan him or get him out somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I can't see Courtois, like, where Belgium's at and where he's at in his career. He needs to play more or not.
And the season he just had?
What seasoning can he have to get better than he is other than playing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, you maybe leave Cech on the bench, maybe play him in the FA Cup and some Carling Cup games, Premier League games here and there.
I mean, the luxury of these super wealthy teams is you're capable of having a great backup at almost every single position at the end of the day.
Having a tandem of Courtois and Cech doesn't get much better than that. If you were in the NHL, you'd be looking at the best tandem in the league.
Moving on to the Bundesliga, Matt. German powerhouse Bayern Munich. Robert Lewandowski came in, probably the worst-kept transfer secret. We've known about this for months. We've known. Yeah. The only question, I guess, ultimately was where would Mandzukic go as a result of this, because you couldn't imagine him staying and playing second fiddle to Robert. They basically score at the same rate in the Bundesliga.
They didn't do much.
It's a good move for Bayern, but
it is, yeah.
I don't know that it was a needed move. Mario was really well-liked in that locker room, and he did a lot, and they were very successful with him. To me, it seems lateral. I don't know why you'd take the gamble for a negligible difference. I do think Lewandowski is a more complete and quote-unquote better player, but when you consider the style Bayern plays, you know, the lone target man, there's not much better in the game at that than Mandzukic. So I worry about maybe the chemistry of a move like that. How would Ribéry and some of the other guys who are close to him, Robben, take it? You know, it just seemed unnecessary, but I'm sure Robert will do a good job with them.
Yeah, I mean, if it was up to me, I would pick Lewandowski over Mandzukic. I mean, Lewandowski has said like months ago he wanted to leave and go over. So, and the transfer was agreed to months and months ago. Mm-hmm. So this, like you said, this isn't a surprise. But outside of that, Munich haven't done too much in terms of transfer activity. Juan Bernat has come from Valencia. It's about basically the only other move they've made. So I guess when you're that good though, why, if it ain't broke, why fix it, right? So, you know, they're going to be good. They're going to be contending. I guess the bigger thing is what Borussia Dortmund have done to maybe try and get back to the top of the Bundesliga.
Well, one of your favorite guys is actually transferred over there. Why don't you chat about him a bit?
Yeah, Ciro Immobile has come from Torino in Italy to Dortmund. A really young Italian player. You know, he's had good years for Torino, but because of the team he played for, he never got to play for like Milan or Inter or Roma, Juve, any of the big teams, Lazio. He was kind of stuck away at little Torino. So he has big shoes to fill because he's essentially Lewandowski's replacement up front. So he's going to have to bang some goals. He's going to be the talisman for Dortmund, get them back towards the top of the Bundesliga and the Champions League. So, but I really do like what he brings to the table. And they also brought in Matthias Ginter from Freiburg, a German international defender. So, you know, solidifying the backcourt a little too.
Bayer Leverkusen made a couple of smaller moves of note. Dario Kresic is one of the reserve keepers on Croatia. He's going to come in and try to compete and play there. And they also brought in Croatian heritage, but Swiss international Josip Dermić, who I talked a little bit about during the tournament. He had that one disappointing miss in the Swiss's last game, but he's a promising young striker who scores a good number of goals. And for whatever reason, you know, the ex-Croatian players, they tend to do pretty well in Germany. So I think at the cost that they got these players for, they're calculated moves, and maybe they'll pay off. We'll have to see how that all plays out, but I mean, on paper, you got to expect Bayern to be a fairly heavy favorite heading into the season.
I think Dortmund will be pretty nipping on their heels, pretty good. I mean, it's going to be a two-horse race because other teams still aren't quite getting there. Schalke always find a way. They kind of stick around, but they've done very little on the transfer market.
Schalke, I remember they were pretty good when they had Raul there. And Rakitic, is he still there?
Yeah, I was watching some highlights of their preseason game. Wow. He was running around doing his thing because they have Julian Draxler, who's a great young, promising German player.
But you got to figure he's going to move on soon.
Because I don't know, half a dozen years ago, Schalke were really one of the main teams.
That's where Rakitic started, actually.
There you go, right?
He came
so
on the scene there.
Schalke kind of have gone away for a little bit, and maybe they're slowly getting back up there.
The last of the major leagues, Matty, the Italian Serie A, the big guns, you know, AC Milan, your Inters, your Juves. Let's start with AC Milan. What are your initial thoughts when you see the players that they've picked up?
Well, the guys they brought in are Alex Jeremy-Menez, Michael Gazzi, and Adil Rami. The Rami deal was agreed to a long time ago, back in January, but Valencia, who we came from, said we want him for the rest of the season, and Milan said fine. Milan weren't competing for anything, they had a terrible season, so they said why not. But Rami's a good defender, French guy, so he'll be coming in, play at center half. You know, they still got Philip Mexes back there, so they're gonna be good. And they also brought in Alex, as we said, former Chelsea player as well. He came from PSG, so
I think he seems like he'd be a pretty good fit with Milan.
Yeah, I think so as well. They're really shoring up that defense, right? So, and Milan's big problem last year was, well, a lot of things, to be honest. they really were.
Do we have another half an hour?
Exactly. So that's a good signing. I really like the Jeremy Menez. He also comes from PSG on a free transfer. So they brought in three really good players and paid $4.25 million, which all went to Rami.
Great value.
Great value. I really do like the Menez signing. I guess looking, their crosstown rivals and their friends, Inter Milan.
Yeah, Nemanja Vidic, Serbian, comes over.
Nemanja Vidic. I really like this move. I really do. I really do rate Vidic. I'm surprised he left United, or his contract wasn't renewed.
But correct me if I'm wrong, Matt. He's had some injury issues
He has. Don't get me wrong.
I'm thinking maybe, you know, the less physical, more tactical pace of Serie A is going to suit his game and where he's at in his career now over the EPL. I wouldn't be surprised to see him play a fairly decent number of years here and maybe put some extra shelf life on a career that may have been winding down if he stayed in the EPL.
Right. He's still only early 30. I think he's 31 years old.
Yeah.
So it's not like his career is like closing.
But he's not getting any faster. And the EPL center backs, they need to be able to move. Like you saw when Rio dropped off too.
That's been the big revelation of the Premier League the last 4 or 5 years, is defenders now have to be fast because the guys like Terry and the Ferdinands and the Vidiches are kind of getting left behind a little, which is why guys like Gary Cahill, Luke Shaw, et cetera, et cetera.
But you consider some of the older veterans in the Italian league, guys like Paolo Maldini, where he played till 38, 39?
Right. You know, Cannavaro, Nesta played forever in Italy before coming over to Montreal for his last 2 years. So, you know, Inter Milan also, they brought in Dodo from Roma as a Roma guy. That's a blah move, whatever. Jan Minvila has come from Rubin Kazan. I spent time in Kazan last year in Russia. Jan Minvila is a really good player, though he went off the wall a little before coming to Kazan, got his stock back up. He's only gone out on loan, so it's not a permanent move. But Jan Minvila is a French midfielder, internationally capped, can hold the ball in the middle of the park pretty right. So that's a nice little signing. for Inter Milan.
Yeah, I like him. He's not a super well-known, quote-unquote, sexy signing, but I think it's a low risk, and it certainly has the potential, maybe if it works out, to turn into something longer term there.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's exactly it. And, you know, Juventus defending champions, they haven't been quite, like we mentioned earlier, they brought in Patrice Evra.
That's probably the big move, right?
Well, maybe Alvaro Morata coming in from Real Madrid might be the other one. 20 million, a striker up front. He's a good player. I like what he brings as well.
Those feel like good moves for Juve, too.
Yeah, I mean, Juve are so good still, right? I'm surprised their manager resigned, though. He decided he had enough and wanted to move on. But I guess finally, last and least not in Serie A, one of the big four team, you know, I have no secret. I am a Roma fan, but I've been really excited what they've done. And they spent minimal money in doing it. They brought in Juan Iturbe in from Verona. Technically, he was a Porto player. Verona brought him for 15 million and then sold him straight to Roma for 22 million. So a good little bit of business there for Verona. But
someone
really,
knows how to play Monopoly, eh?
Yes, they do. Well, Iturbe was on loan at Verona last year, so that is how that came about. We mentioned previously Ashley Cole's come in. That was a free transfer. Sato Kaita, do you remember him, Rob?
I do, yeah.
He's come into Roma now from Valencia on a free transfer. Sally Ucan
already
has
dropped,
come from Fenerbahce.
The Raul's still kicking around on me, and now I get a Sato Kaita reference.
You do. I'll be honest with you. When I saw Footy
Roundup, never failing the surprise.
When I saw Sato Kaita signing for Roma, I was like, whoa, where has this guy been the last couple of years?
That's a name blast from the past.
There he is. And the other one as well, they brought in Urbi Emanuelsson from AC Milan. I have a very good friend of mine in South Africa, a lifelong AC Milan fan, and he's disappointed that Emanuelsson's moved on from his beloved Milan. And he says that Rome have got a really good signing here. He didn't play much for Milan last year. Basically, managed decision more than, you know, ability. But he should fit in pretty good with Roma. And Roma, you know, are always looking good. They were second last year. They're back in the Champions League. So they're back to prominence where they should be.
Matty, I saw an interesting interview and quote from your ex-England international, Ashley Cole, who apparently turned down a couple offers from the MLS in United States and Canada. And he said, quote, he's not ready to relax on a beach yet. To me, extremely disrespectful and ignorant comments from Cole. As an English guy, what are your thoughts on when you heard this?
I was surprised.
Yeah.
I actually didn't find out about it since you were telling me earlier in the day. So to me, it is disrespectful. It's just like MLS still has that reputation. It's where old guys go to die. I mean, it seems that way right now. And that's why the Bradley signing for Toronto was so big, because a guy came in his prime to MLS with Defoe. You know, we've seen Nesta come over, Danny Dicchio, you know, Beckham was up there. Yeah, and obviously Ashley Cole said, you know what, boys, I'm not there yet. I mean, Ashley Cole is still a really good defender. He's lost a step or two, don't get me wrong. But for Roma, he'll fit in nicely over there. But he would have been exceptional in MLS.
I think so, yeah. I mean, has he burned his possible bridge in the future about one last paycheck after that comment?
Maybe, but I mean, yeah. You know, these MLS teams will bring in guys who are well-known, well-established international stars, and Ashley Cole is that. It is surprising. I'm surprised he didn't just say I wasn't. He could have been a lot better and said, I'm not quite ready for that in my career yet.
Or it's not the right fit, and there's still some more things I want to do. I just don't think he had to throw MLS under the bus. It doesn't accomplish anything for anybody. Just, you know, be at a little cliche. At this point in my career, Roma's the best fit for me. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But, you know, you still save face a little bit. A couple other transfers, Matt. This isn't any new news or anything like that, but I think it's worth going over. The new New York City FC starting in 2015. Frankie Lampard, another Englishman, he's coming over, and he joins David Villa, who's the first player signed by that expansion club. Lampard, as of now that I'm aware of, does not have a club team in the interim. But
he's going to Australia.
Is he?
He's going down to Melbourne City with David Villa.
I know Villa was there, but he's going with them as well?
Yeah, because that's their parent club in Australia.
Okay.
So they're both heading down there to play in the A-League until basically their season starts up here in MLS.
I think they're great signings for New York. Too. New York's a market that if you don't bring in the names and star power, nobody's really going to give a hill of beans, I guess. Let's put it that way.
Right.
So I think it's good marketing for both of them. Most people know David Villa as an international goal scorer on Spain, who's, you know, he scored a number of big goals for the Spanish side. And Lampard's been a fixture for a number of years, been phased out for a couple of years now, as we touched on previously with the youth movement. But you see them as good fits as well, huh?
Oh, 100%. I love both these signings. I think that's a big, big move. You know, MLS is starting to expand now with, you know, New York, Orlando coming. Orlando made a big splash in Kaká, Robinho supposedly coming over too. And New York City said, hey, we're going to sign Villa and Lampard. That's goals, goals, and goals, and goals. That's exactly what that is. That's a great signing. Villa's going to be the talisman. Lampard has never been afraid to get forward and score goals. So, and they're both, you know, they're not old still. They still have a lot of legs left. They a lot of time to you know, dominating that league. They'll be perennial all-stars. So great signings, great signings. I think it's a major big move for New York City to get going right away with those two signings.
Well, it'll be a great kickstart for the upcoming season. Their marketing campaign, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, Maddie, quick look at the MLS tables, where we stand. I mean, we haven't gone through this in some time now with the World Cup taking the majority of our attention on the show. But Eastern Conference-wise, Toronto FC, they're in third place. They have a few games in hand on their opponents. They've done fairly solidly this season. They kind of not stumbled out of the gate, but they kind of like up and down, hit and miss. I think they're kind of feeling their way with some of the new players. But they look comfortable for my money to finally end this as a Torontonian, this ridiculous playoff drought they've had.
Yeah, I would be shocked if they don't make it now. I think we're getting to that stage. They're starting to play pretty good football around there. You know, they're wheeling and dealing in the transfer market, bringing in some guys, moving out some guys, and obviously Defoe has been nothing but brilliant so far. And
yeah, right now they're just for the listeners, they're 3 points clear of being in the playoffs, but they also have 4 games in hand on the Union, so it's pretty comfortable shape even if they're splitting those games.
Side note, what is with MLS's schedule? Like, why can't we just have all the boys play Saturday, and if you want to play midweek games, just have them all play Wednesday? You know, TFC have played 17 games and other teams
21.
Like, yeah, it's mind-blowing. I don't understand that.
I mean, I understand the perspective of in the beginning of the year, Toronto FC, it always takes them to maybe sometimes even 3 or 4 games before their first home game because the weather's so cold.
Right.
We went to that
but
game earlier
no
this
to
year.
Be behind.
But yeah, they shouldn't be. They should still be a relatively even amount of games, even if it's more greater on the road. It is bizarre. I don't think it's anything we're going to figure out on this show.
No, it's
but
not. But
the rivals, Montreal, they're struggling tremendously, locked in the cellar of the Eastern Conference right now. There doesn't seem to be any light at the end of the tunnel for them this year.
No, 14 points in 18 games isn't really going to
scare anybody.
A lot of interest right now. It's a bit of a letdown for Montreal. It's kind of a shame because they had a decent year last year. Marco DVL hasn't been really doing much when, you know, he's been really good since he moved over for them. So
yeah, I think the wheels have fallen off hard. Devay was already old when he first came
over,
too.
Yeah, so, you know.
But you knew the Saputos would love to market with an Italian star on their team, so that, I don't think, surprised anybody in the Nesta experiment as well.
Right, I thought Nesta was quite all right for Montreal back in the day, but, I mean, he's not on the team anymore. It's just Montreal just haven't been good this year. I mean, there's no other way to really put this. 3 wins, 10 losses, 5 draws. He's scored only 18 goals. That's a goal a game. I mean, it's not going to get you anywhere, so...
The Vancouver Whitecaps over in the West, they're tied up with the Rapids for the last spot. I think it's going to be...
And the Galaxy.
Oh, and the Galaxy, correct, yeah. It's going to be nip and tuck, I think, for them to make it when you look at who they're competing with. But yeah. I like what Carl Robinson's done with that young team.
I do too.
I've watched a number of their games, actually written some articles on the Whitecaps as well. Russell Tybert's there. He's coming along, a young Canadian international. I think Robinson's really got them... playing well, and I like the system. They're really structured team, and they don't beat themselves. Hurtado up front has been great for them, too. It's going to be close. Do you see Vancouver competing or making the playoffs? It's almost a coin flip for me.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, they're always on the edge. They're never, like, Montreal bad this year, but they're never, say, Seattle good this year, who are just running away in the West.
Yeah, they always seem like they're just in or just out, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly it, and this year doesn't seem any different. Like, we look at the table here in front of us, and FC Dallas, who they play their next game against, that's a big test, see where they really stack up, and if they can, you know, they'll hop over the FC Dallas in the standings as well of a win. That's it. That's in Vancouver. That's a home game for them, but Dallas are second on 29 points. Then you have Real Salt Lake there on 29, who they drew 1-1 within their last game on the road, so a good away point. And you got Galaxy, Colorado, and Vancouver, and Portland and Chivas are kind of a little behind, 3 or 4 points back. So it's really coming down to who's going to take this last playoff spot, obviously, unless Portland or Chivas really get hot for a while. So it's a coin flip. It's far too early still, I think, to really say. But they definitely have the potential and the withdrawal to get into playoffs.
So at this stage of the season, Maddie, I see it maybe 50% for Vancouver.
Right.
Sorry for Montreal listeners, 0 for them in my estimation. And I'd probably... I'm not fully completely confident. I've just seen too much bad stuff from them.
Exactly.
But I would put it at probably maybe 80 to 85% for TFC.
Yeah, I would say around there. Realistically, if we weren't so used to failure from TFC, we would say more closer to 90.
It's just what we've always seen, unfortunately. Until we
really
see otherwise, it's hard to expect otherwise.
Toronto would really have to drop the ball bigger than any season we've seen in the past.
Or Defoe and Bradley season-ending injury, maybe.
Anything bad like that. I mean, TFC will never be in a better position to make the playoffs than they are right now.
It's true. Maddie, just one more quick point before we sign off. This morning I saw that Jay Demerit, the Vancouver Whitecaps defensive player, who's also their captain, incidentally, has retired. I don't understand players who retire in the middle of a year. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, it seems to be more common in the MLS in North America where a guy just hangs on and he's like, I'm done at this point. How bad could you be that you just kind of sewer your teammates by leaving mid-season? I'm just not a fan of that type of retirement.
Yeah, I'm with you. Unless you physically can't walk, then you should, in my estimation,
yeah, you can be a, you know, support role player on the bench still. Yeah. You were the captain, right?
Demerit's been a good player for Vancouver. Yeah. He hasn't exactly been like a nobody out there. And he had a good career in England as well for a while.
I mean, why play half the season and walk away? It
baffles me. Especially when you're this tight in a playoff race. You know, it's like, you know, with all due respect, Montreal. It's not like you're Montreal and you're like, well, our season's over. You know, I got an injury, I'm nursing.
It's time to hang him up. Yeah, you got a lot to play for. And I don't know. You just hope that that doesn't hurt the dynamic in that locker room too much. But when I caught wind of that this morning, it was just completely perplexing to me.
I don't know. Like, could you imagine, like, I don't know. Like,
it's like, I just don't show up for our show today. And then you just kind of carry the mail on your own.
Just sit here and talk on my own for 31 minutes to everyone else and hope they're listening.
That's it for today, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Cheers.